Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 6th day of December, Anno Domini 2025, and you, oh, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, get off your shoes, don't get the blues. Have you paid your dues? Because here comes the news.
Ta-da.
Google has Google has released the December 2025 Android Security Bulletin addressing 107 vulnerabilities, including two flaws actively exploited in targeted attacks. They are information disclosure and elevation of privilege issues, respectively affecting Android versions 13 through 16, which is the current one. Excuse me. There are indications that they may be under exploitation. And in other words, there are 0 days being actively targeted now. While Google has not shared any technical or exploitation details about the flaws, similar flaws in the past were used for targeted exploitation by commercial spyware or nation-state operations targeting a small number of high-interest individuals. This month's updates address a total of 51 flaws on Android framework and system components covered by the 2025-1201 patch level, and another 56 bugs in the kernel, and third-party closed-source components covered by the 2025-1205 patch level. There are 4 critical severity fixes for elevation of privileges flaws in kernel subcomponents, and 2 critical fixes for Qualcomm-powered devices. For you Samsung folks, they say they've ported fixes from the Google update and vendor-specific fixes, too. It is important to note that the updates cover devices running Android 13 and later, but devices on Android 10 and later may receive some crucial fixes via Google Play system updates. Also, Play Protect can detect and block undocumented malware and attack chains, so users of any Android version should keep the components up to date and active. Those on older Android versions should either move to a third-party distribution that regularly incorporates Google security fixes, or switch to a newer device model for active support. Easy enough to say, hard to do. Oh, and prepare yourselves. They've changed the icons yet again, so many of you are going to automatically hate it and have no idea what's where on your screens any longer. It also seems to have changed the contact widget, so I hate it. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is update your Pixel phone now. And your choices are, I'm already up to date. I'll do it right now. Relax, I'll get to it. Going commando, baby. And Pixel what now? So far, we have 27 votes, of which Pixel what now is the majority. And I'm glad to say going commando, baby has 0 votes. But of course, I expect you'll have more to say about this, so you can always vote in the poll at soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. And you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Or toll free at 800-790-0415. I do like one of the things that I particularly appreciate about having a real Pixel phone is that you get the updates immediately.
Yeah, there's... The warning's right there for you. It's you got to restart your machine. You know, you should restart. Don't even have to think about it.
You don't even have to think about it. The problem with other devices is that everybody else has to get their hands on it. So yep. Samsung, I as I read in the announcement, beg your pardon, Samsung says that they are quickly rolling out their update.
To throw their bloatware in first.
Right. But also to make whatever changes they need to make to their hardware, for their hardware. I understand that part.
Compatibility issues.
And the rest of them all have to do the same, but not all of them make it a priority. Not all of them have allocated the number of resources that Google and Samsung have. So you will always get your updates first on Pixel and then fairly quickly on Samsung, and then everybody else kind of waits. And in some cases, you're also waiting for the carrier vendor, whether that's Verizon or T-Mobile or whoever, to also do some stuff to it. You know, so the big dog has to be the last one to mark the tree, right? So it goes down, goes up the chain, and everybody has to get their hands on it and make their mark on it before it goes out the door to you.
Mm-hmm.
In the case of Google, there's only one company, so it happens pretty fast. But they all do it. I mean, you know, when Apple has an update, it's the same. It's the same thing. It's got. They only have one company, so they don't have to worry about the secondary market things. But they still do have to worry about making sure that it works for all their models and all of that stuff. So it's a much more complex thing than, hey, here's all the fixes and changes. But like I said, they've changed some of the icons, so people are going to hate it, just absolutely hate it. And
it's life.
Yeah, I have a quick. There are a couple of icons that you can put on your desktop to make a quick phone call. So I can just hit that icon and up it pops. That used to be up front when you were putting in icons. Now it's hidden several levels deep. So it's a pain in the neck to get to. But you can still get to it. So I'm happier than I was yesterday afternoon. So I'm not terribly upset. Okay, let's head to the phones. Our first caller is Ed from Ithaca, New York. And I wish I could spell Ithaca. Hi, Ed, what's up?
I think we just lost him.
Okay, we don't have Ed from Ithaca, New York. It's my fault for misspelling Ithaca. I apologize for that. All right, we'll wait a minute. Somebody else is...
Is this Ed?
And I seem to be having some audio problems with the stream.
And Steve is having audio problems with the stream, so those of you listening...
All right.
Those of you who are listening to...
I jinxed it. I said I had problems streaming Facebook last week, so it crashed this week.
Oh, yeah?
On a different computer.
It's listening. It's listening to every moment. All right, our first caller is back. It's Ed from Ithaca, New York. Hi, Ed. Sorry we lost you. What's up?
Good morning, guys. No, it was my fault. I pushed stop or off instead of taking off speakerphone. So I have two Apple questions, and I have one Windows question.
Okay.
The Windows.
Why don't you start with the Windows question, since Steve seems to be having...
I think I'm caught up.
Some okay. Small issues. Go ahead.
Okay, I got an Windows 11 computer recently, and I'm wondering about antivirus. Does it come with Windows Defender?
It does come with Windows Defender, and it may be turned on.
But I wouldn't rely on it.
Well, now, you know what? The recent tests say that it is 98% accurate. The problem is... that for the longest time, they only ever updated it during Patch Tuesday. But now they seem to be, every once in a while at least, sending out new virus updates.
Well, that's the critical thing for me.
Right.
Is, you know, yes, they might say, oh, yeah, we're 98% on what day? Because whereas if you use some of the others that we recommend, they're constantly looking for spyware, malware, and everything else. And that's the biggie now. Don't get me wrong. You still need an antivirus program. But spyware and malware are far more prevalent out there right now trying to attack and get your information than just viruses. Oh, yeah, we put a virus on there, messed up your machine, and deleted files.
Yeah,
they want that information so they can steal it and resell it.
Viruses on a downturn. What is much more likely on a PC is it's going to come with a trial of someone else's antivirus program.
Like McAfee
Windows Defender is probably turned off. But people don't realize it's a trial. And yep. so they think they're safe, and then 30 days later, the trial expires.
Yeah.
Right. So and that's what I was about to say. Make sure it's turned on, which you can do in settings. And you know, like I said, if as long as it's regularly updated, it's actually pretty good.
Okay. Yeah, but I should also have an anti-malware.
Sorry?
Program. I should have anti-malware as well.
Yeah, that's good. Not a problem.
Super anti-spyware and malware bytes are the two that we recommend. Because no one product does the full job. Those two together do a great job of keeping your machines, you know, somewhat safe. I won't say it, you know, 100%. You got to do your due diligence unless you pay for the product and have it automatically do the updates.
Well, and a lot of the bigger AV suites, they're now total protection, so they include some anti-malware protection, but not as good as the dedicated ones.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Okay, great. Okay, thank you. Moving on.
Yeah. No, Steve.
I have an older MacBook Air, 2015, and it's saying that the Safari browser is out of date, and I'm wondering what other browser you recommend. I'm already using Firefox, but I want two on the machine.
Yeah, Firefox or Chrome are fine. Since Safari is considered part of the OS, it's not updated without updating the operating system itself.
And I need to remove a lot of data, like 25 gigabytes in order to be able to update.
Yeah, right. And your 2015 MacBook is only capable of running OS 12. So it's, what are we up to, 13, 14, 15, 26. So it's already four versions behind and cannot run the latest Safari. So so Firefox and Chrome are currently your only bets. And in a year or two, you're going to have to go – that's true. You're going to have to go to the ESR versions because a lot of the browsers have now started cutting back on how old of an OS they support.
Right. But right now you could run Chrome or Firefox or Brave.
Brave?
Yeah, Brave is also based on Chromium, which is the same base that Chrome uses. But it is very good about privacy, protecting you from trackers and ads and all of that stuff.
Similar to the DuckDuckGo browser.
Mm-hmm. Similar to DuckDuckGo. Oh, okay. I don't know if DuckDuckGo is available for Macs. I think it is.
Yeah, it says iOS, Android, Windows, and Mac.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, so I've got other options there.
Yep.
Now, looking ahead, I use an old iPhone 7 or 8 as an iPod. And it's getting to get old and finicky. And I know that with Apple Music, it will only allow one Apple device to transfer music to. So how would I get rid of that on the Apple Music and put on a new device that I get?
Well, you can only sync one computer to one iPod.
Yeah, and that's what I would want to do.
Yeah, you can have any number of devices using Apple Music.
No, but I mean, how do I get rid of the iPod that's on there and put on a new one?
You don't have to. So if you want to take your phone and sync it to a new computer, you have to erase the phone to sync it to the new computer.
No, I'm talking about new phone to the same old computer.
Doesn't matter. Just sync it the same way. You can have any number of devices on a computer.
But only one at a time.
Only one can be synced at a time.
Right. So you can have 15 of them, but you can only sync one.
Right.
Okay, so that's not an issue.
Okay. Ironically, or not, if you partition your computer and put different OSs on it, each OS counts as one. So it's not specifically the computer. So we thought they were using the MAC address, so someone tried to figure out how they were doing it. So if you have the same computer but two OSs, that counts as two devices and you can't sync.
Okay.
Oops.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, one more question about on Windows. With the Windows 11 that I got, the media player, the Windows media player, is configured differently than the old one that was on the.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they changed it.
Can you go back to the old one?
No, you cannot. It won't work.
DLLs are different.
Yeah, it's a different this media player is the one you're stuck with, and I'm sorry.
Or you have someone
alternatives, else's. Right? Yeah. You have
that's
alternatives like VLC, or you know, there's a dozen of them out there. But if you're going to stick with media player, then it's the one that's there.
Okay, well, I liked it because it allowed me to change the speed up, you know, up to double speed or something. And this one only gives me the options of 1.25, 1.5.
Right.
Yeah, a lot of the other media players give you more options. I can generally listen at 1.75, but 2X is too much for me.
Yeah, right, I agree, and it doesn't have a 1.75. Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate you guys. I hope you had a great Thanksgiving, and I look forward to listening to you in the future as well.
Well, thank you.
Have a good holiday.
Thank you.
Didn't Winamp come back? Yeah, Winamp is back.
Winamp is back. VLC lets you change the speed.
As a media player, yeah.
As a media player. So, yeah, there are
alternatives. There's even a Mac version of Winamp, or iOS version.
Well, then it's not really Winamp anymore, is it?
Yeah, and a Google version.
Yeah, Winamp was the thing. It was, as they say, the bee's knees.
Yeah, I remember when that first came out. It's like, holy. It's like right up there with Total Recorder.
Oh, love Total Recorder.
That thing has been out for decades.
What do I only want to partially record? Too bad. It's a total record.
Yeah. All or none.
Well, but it let you do so much. And it was only, what, $15 back in the day?
We're talking literally decades, folks. Decades ago that we started using it. This is back when we were two different stations ago. And using it to record, I used it to record our radio station when we were on elsewhere. And I had it on cassette tapes, and it did a perfect job. I mean, I set it up, boop, clicked it just before I left it.
Okay, so 30 years ago, Total Recorder was $15.
Yep. What's it up to now?
$17.95.
Oh, damn, inflation.
Inflation, you can't believe it. Now, if you want there's a professional edition for $36, and there's a video pro edition for, you know, $54. But
depending on your needs.
The version that we used, which was $15, has only gone up $2.95
in 30 years. Holy man.
Unbelievable. It's a Total Recorder.
And it's rock solid.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. And it would let you set a time. So this is what we used it for.
Yep.
You would say to Total Recorder, okay, here's the audio stream coming from the station.
Yeah.
And
start and stop times.
This is the start time. This is the stop time. I want it to be an MP3 or whatever.
Yep.
And boom, it would be done. Now, I use MPlayer to do that now under Linux, which is free.
Yep.
And it does exactly the same thing. But for years, I used Total Recorder, absolutely. and it's gone up a whole $2.95 in 30 years. That's amazing. That's amazing. Well done, Total Recorder people.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of 30 years, did you see that email I sent you? 30 years ago, a guy at Netscape spent 10 days stuck in his office and created JavaScript.
Yeah.
Warts and all, it hinges on the entire internet now.
Right, right, right.
It's one of those things at the bottom of that whole Total Internet. Have you seen the updates to that Total Internet? From XKCD, they put Cloudflare and AWS under there.
Yeah.
And then they have a Microsoft Angry Bird flying at it, whatever the hell Microsoft is doing. And AI is kind of tilting it up on an angle.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And then there's some guy in Des Moines who's been developing an open source core project that everyone has forgotten about for 40 years.
Well, yeah, JavaScript was originally, like you said, a little side project.
Yeah.
We need to do this. It'll take a couple of days and make it happen. It'll last for a while. Nobody's going to use it much. It'll be fine. We'll use it for this one project and we'll be done. 30 years later, we're still using JavaScript today. That stuff very rarely dies.
Yeah, and it's rock solid. I mean, you know, like they say, if it ain't broke, why fix it? And,
exactly,
you know,
right.
Poking holes in it, you know, it's...
Yep, from Brendan Eich.
Yep. The basic code that runs the internet is essentially 60 years old.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and then he went on to found Mozilla.
Yeah.
Left Netscape and founded Mozilla.
Yep. But, you know...
And then he left Mozilla and founded Brave.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did.
Man on the move.
Yep. But that's the way that stuff works. The underlying substance of the internet is Linux, which owes its existence to Unix, which is 60 years old.
Oh.
And many of the programs are really 40, 45 years old. You know, all the underlying stuff.
And Dennis Ritchie just passed recently.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's the thing. Since we're coming up on the year's end, you know, and we kind of reflect back on stuff and that, you know, to think how far we've come from when we first started this show in technology. I can remember, you know, voice recognition, you know, and being able to talk into a microphone and have it clearly dictate. Without paying hundreds of dollars. Now it's, we can do that.
Now you get it for free in Google Docs.
Yeah.
It was a Power Secretary was the program before Dragon Dictate. It was like $2,500.
Right.
And it was designed to replace your secretary so you could dictate in. And my wife was a medical transcriptionist, and her doctor tried all sorts of transcription programs. None of them worked as well as a real person.
Oh, of course not. Of course not. The big thing, and now it's actually better. It used to be, for example, you could dictate, but you'd have to do it for real. So, for example, hello, exclamation point. How are you today, question mark?
Mm-hmm.
I'm fine, comma, thanks for asking, period. Now you just say, hello, how are you?
Yeah.
I'm fine, thanks for asking. And it will get it right most of the time.
Yeah.
Yep.
Punctuation and everything.
It's amazing. It's amazing. The distance we've come... with transcription, vocal transcription of text. And I appreciate it because, you know, I have both carpal tunnel and pretty bad arthritis. So I do a lot of dictating these days.
Yeah, David Pogue was at New York Times forever, their technology columnist.
Yeah.
He also did the same thing. He had bad carpal tunnel. And so you become a writer?
Yeah, well, exactly.
Yeah. So he reviewed every single dictation program he could find. And it was always interesting to see how each one worked. You used to need a separate chip. Apple had their AV series that had a special DSP, digital signal processor, in it to be able to handle dictation.
Yep. And the Newton, remember the Newton? That had its own chip.
Yep.
It was a very rudimentary to do stuff, but that was handwriting. I don't think the Newton did.
No, I don't think it had voice.
No, it didn't do voice.
That was the handwriting.
That was the handwriting chip. Sorry.
No, it's well, like I said, there's
a 20 megahertz ARM 610 processor.
20 megahertz.
20 screaming megahertz.
Wow, unbelievable.
Like I say, if you stop and reflect on all the stuff that has changed in the 36 years that we've been doing this program, it would blow your mind.
That's one of my favorite stories. Someone was interviewing a woman who turned 100 and asked what the biggest technological thing she saw in the last 100 years. And they're thinking cars, airplanes, spaceships, land on them. She said the mop.
The mop?
The mop. For thousands of years, women have been on their hands and knees scrubbing floors. Someone invented the mop and saved all those backs. It's the best technological invention I've ever seen.
Nice.
But the mop has been around for centuries, or decades.
Decades, yeah.
And she's 100.
Yeah, but I
so
mean,
she scrubbed floors on her hands and knees.
And this was probably like 50 years ago or something. Right. I read this, yeah.
Wow.
So someone thought of putting a handle on a scrub brush and turned it into a mop.
Yep. Amazing.
But going back, you know, just all the changes from that box that we used to, you know, shove disk in that, to the stuff now that we can sit there and tell our computers or the little boxes, hey, so-and-so, do this and do that.
There's more power in my watch than we sent to the moon.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just, it's amazing.
The mop was patented in 1893.
1893, there you go. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you, but only if you give us a call. I know we have somebody on the line. Please hold on. We'll get to you when we come back. But the rest of you can call in at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 800-790-0415. We'll be back with a whole lot more sound bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More sound bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites, and we have Rick from Pittsford, New York on the line. What's up, Rick?
Hey, good afternoon, guys.
Good afternoon.
Google-related question. Let's say I've got three Google accounts. One is like a personal one where I keep documents and that. And then one is I'm using for things like YouTube TV subscriptions and that.
Mm-hmm.
And then one is sort of a throwaway one where if somebody wants an email, I'll put it in that account.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's a national newspaper that I look at, and they have articles that you can comment on. And recently they've gone to a thing where you can't see most of the comments without signing in. All right. They give you three options: sign in with Apple, sign in with Facebook, sign in with Google. Well, I don't do Apple or Facebook, so I went in with Google.
Mm-hmm.
I put in my throwaway email address, and it comes back and says password. I'm going, wait a minute, I don't want to give them the password to one of my accounts. So I just put in a fake password, 1234, and it won't let me in.
Right.
So here's my question, because I just don't know enough about Google. When I look at my one account, my other ones pop up, and I'm seemingly like linked to all that. Had I stupidly given them my real password to get into my account, was I giving them the ability to see everything?
Generally, no. So you're not giving the other end your Google account. The other end is asking Google who you are. Google is asking for your password, and then Google is telling the other end, here's Rick.
Right, and so what it does
this is the same thing Facebook and Apple does, that
right,
sign in with.
Right. Theoretically, all it actually shares with the other website is your name, your email address, and your picture.
And it will ask if it wants more than that. It's like we sign into to mail, you get a scary message about macOS or Windows OS wants to access your mail. You have to say yes.
Yeah.
Because this computer needs to access your mail account. Yeah, that's what you're trying to do. But it's a scary message to a lot of people.
Yes, it is. And you can go into the account details and authorize what gets shared.
In each account.
In each account individually.
Yeah. And are you using Chrome as your browser?
Well, I use Chrome and Firefox.
Yeah. So they will remember your other Google accounts, and you can create a different profile for each account so that you can log into each account, and it keeps them separated, but in separate profiles.
Safely.
Yeah.
Now, Google... Go ahead.
I was wondering, what if I wanted to keep these totally separate? Like, I'd want to put in a password every time I wanted to get into one account and that, just to make it a little more secure. How would I do that?
Well, you can't doing the sign in with Google.
You got to have a consistent password.
Once your Google password there. Some sites will also let you sign in with your own email.
Right.
That means you have to manage your login credentials.
Right.
Sign in with Google, sign in with Apple, sign in with Facebook were designed so that you let the other company manage your credentials. So you don't have to have 100 different accounts on every service. You just use your one account. So it's a convenience for you. And I've started seeing some sites are not letting you sign in with your email because they don't want to have to manage your email and password and keep it secret, because the other end is really bad at keeping secrets. I've even started seeing some sites don't use a password at all. Every time you log in, StreamYard is like that. Every time you log in, it sends a code to your email. So you actually have no password. Your password changes every time you use the system. But that's defined by the other end.
Right.
So and you can't, saying that it's safe to give them my password to one of my accounts?
You're not giving it to them. You're giving it to Google. If you look at the address bar in that window, it's actually at Google.
Okay, I'll check that.
Now, you can set Google to require a second factor. So you type your password, they send you a code. Usually it will ask you to open the YouTube app on your phone and tap, yes, this is me.
Not YouTube app.
Or the Google app.
It'll Authenticator.
It'll do it. Well,
to verify.
They don't use Authenticator. They use their other apps, I've seen, at least that I've run across. It'll tell me to open YouTube on my phone and say, yes, this is me, and then type the number that it's showing.
Right.
Okay, so the news organization is not actually getting my password or the ability to get into my accounts.
Correct.
Right. Okay. All they are getting is a verification from Google that you are who you say you are.
And somewhere there is a list, and I'm looking for it, to see who you've given it to.
Well, he does that. It does give them your name, your email address, and your picture. But you're going to do that anyway if you sign in with something else anyway. Google, of course, also will have your IP address and some details about your system. But they always get that anyway, and they're not passing that on.
Yeah, I've just never encountered this way before. I mean, I've had places ask for an email, like Fox News. They want to send an email, but they've never asked my password.
Right, and in this case, they are not asking for your password. Google is to verify that it's you, so that they can tell the other site, yeah, this is you. They are the verifier, not they're not passing the information.
All right, great. Well, thank you very much.
Sure. One of the things that I've done is I went to duck.com and got a duck.com email address.
And sound about your name?
What those do, which I... Your mic is on.
Okay, hold on.
He doesn't not paying attention. The thing that that does is it grabs the email, strips out all the trackers, sends it on to me anonymously.
Mm-hmm.
Then when I answer, it grabs that answer, strips me out of it, and sends the answer back.
Yep.
So that's really
kind of
nice.
That's a neat way to do it, too, yeah.
Yeah.
And I just posted the link about third-party sign-in on Google and how you can see who you're using. Shockingly, I'm using YouTube to sign in with Google.
Well, interesting. Interesting. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark from Rochester, New York. What's up, Mark?
Well, I have a couple of different questions for you.
Uh-huh.
The first one is, you folks a couple of weeks ago mentioned about some microcomputers that you folks kind of liked.
Yes.
What were they?
Raspberry Pis.
Mm. Oh, okay.
The microcomputers we were talking about are Raspberry Pis.
Yeah. Okay.
And you woke up Dave. Dave is now happy. The other thing we were talking about were the various companies that make mini computers,
yeah,
which are
the next hot thing.
The next hot thing. And the Intel makes one called the NUC, the next unit of computing. B something makes some. A bunch of companies make little mini computers.
Okay.
And those are more powerful than Raspberry Pis,
mm-hmm,
also cost more.
Okay.
Yeah, $200.
Then there's things that are bigger than a NUC, but smaller than the traditional computer, that Lenovo.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Tiny, they call it.
Yes.
And I've seen a lot of these in businesses where it's 6 or 8 inches square and then an inch deep, and you mount it to the back of the monitor.
It's essentially a Mac Mini.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a laptop without a screen,
right?
Or a keyboard, so you can shrink it down even smaller.
Right.
So Apple calls theirs the Mac Mini.
Right.
Lenovo calls theirs the Tiny.
Right.
Okay.
So there's lots of those you can buy. If you're looking for something with minimal cost,
mm-hmm,
and enough power to do all kinds of things, then the Raspberry Pi is really kind of the way to go. The 4s or the 5s in particular are you can use them as a low-power desktop.
Okay.
So, you know, you could put Linux on them or whatever and run them as a regular desktop. It's not going to be as fast. And it certainly, you know, isn't necessarily going to be quite as powerful. It's not going to be the thing you run your business on.
Use them as backup servers.
You can use them as backup servers. You can use them as just your
Plex server.
Plex server. One of the things that I know people do is they throw a little monitor and keyboard on it, and they sit it next to their chair in the den. If they really need to do something, it's right there. It costs total of about $100.
I know a couple guys that are using it as a weather station.
Weather station
to be able to pull in weather.
Well, I've got one. I use Raspberry Pi, and I've got my ham radio map on it. And it sits there and travel. It'll keep track of the satellites and where the moon and the sun are. And I can track different satellites if I was doing moon bouncing or satellite bouncing, along with other activity on the ham bands.
Yeah, and I use a couple of mine to do backups and manage stuff around my house and do all of that stuff. So they are very capable. And so, yeah, I'm a big fan.
For not much cost. I mean,
for not much cost.
Think of it. You know, what we used to go, you know, back in the days where you'd spend $2,000 and $3,000, that's thousands of dollars for a desktop computer or this big box that sat next to your desk. Now they're about the size of a pack, you know, a bar of soap.
Mm-hmm. And they're $20-$30.
Yeah.
For the core. Yeah. So Canakit.com.
Yeah, Canakit is where you want to go.
Is where you want to go. Because then you can get a case and a power supply and a fan and everything else.
Yeah,
around
the little I also recommend when you do.
And then you're up to $100.
Well, yeah, but it's $100 for a desktop computer. Come on.
Yep.
Yeah, and I also get it so it has a little toggle switch that once you power it down, you can actually turn the power off instead of just yanking the power out all the time. You know,
and if you get a 400 or a 500, it comes inside a keyboard.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's lots of options. The folks at Canakit are where I've been going for decades.
Yeah, same here.
To get my Raspberry Pi fix.
I see. Okay, my other question to you is, can you use a tar application to basically archive some material and put it directly onto your flash drive instead of to the directory that you're working with?
I'm sorry, say that again. Use what to do?
I'm looking for a possible tar command, if there is one.
Tar.
A tar command, okay.
Yeah. Yes, in order to go from a particular directory that I have, and I want to put that on a flash drive. Can I do that directly, or do I have to still take it, make the archive, put it in that directory, and then move it from there to the flash drive?
I believe
you should be able to just give it any destination.
Yeah,
you want.
Any destination you want.
Okay, put that in front of the new title for it.
It depends on whether it's source destination or destination source.
Right. Well, you
it's
do,
source destination.
It's source destination. So you would say tar space files, like star, whatever it is you're doing, space, and then the archive. So let's say you wanted to put that on your flash drive. You go to /mount/your name/G
or whatever
it is, and the name of the archive, and you're on your way.
You may need to use the -C command.
Okay.
Before the target directory, depending on which Linux you're using.
Okay.
Creates the new archive.
And says you're going to use a different destination other than your current destination.
Right.
I see. Now, the other part of this is I've been using Mint, and they have a program in there called USB Image Writer. Now, from what I understand, I may need that in order to work with a flash drive, in order to make it bootable. So the question is, do I have to put the USB image writer to do that, or do I just put the ISO on the flash drive, plug the flash drive in, and then tell it I want it to make it bootable from there?
No, you do need some sort of image writer like Belina Etcher. Linux Mint does have a program called USB Image Writer, and it does the same thing.
Okay.
So you can't just copy the ISO. It has to be written in a the proper format.
Right. Copying the ISO would let you transport it to another computer. It's still not usable.
Right.
Okay. So then I can go to USB Image Writer first, then I put that on the stick, and then I...
No. What you do is you run USB Image Writer on your machine.
Before that, you download the ISO you want.
Well, you download the ISO you want, so you've got it somewhere.
Okay.
Then you open up USB Image Writer, and it will say what's your source.
Okay.
That's the ISO you downloaded.
Right.
What's your destination? That's your USB stick that you've already plugged in.
Okay.
Go.
Okay.
And it'll write it to it. It'll take some time. It's not instantaneously.
Yeah, USB drives are not fast.
Yes.
But it will write it, and then it is, and then it will verify it, so it's going to take even longer.
Okay.
But once it's done, you will now have a thumb drive that you can take to another machine and boot up with that and do whatever you want to do.
I see. Okay. Because the other thing I saw was kind of mixed up about how to do this. And I'm very glad you guys helped me out.
Yeah, no, Belina Etcher, USB Image Writer, Rufus under Windows, all work pretty much the same way. This is what I want to burn. This is what I want to burn it to. Go.
And make it bootable in the end.
Well, okay. If the ISO is bootable, it will be bootable.
And the other thing I like about Belina Etcher is it, you know, by putting in the flash drive or whatever you're doing, it purposely hides your C drive, so you don't inadvertently wind up erasing that and formatting that. I mean, you can get to it, but you've got to really go through some extra steps. So Belina Etcher in that factor, you know, kind of protects you from inadvertently wiping out your hard drive.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you guys very much for your help.
You're welcome.
Have a good day.
Sure. Oh, hold on.
Yes.
According to what I'm reading here, and I do have Linux Mint on a machine, but I don't have it in front of me.
Okay.
Apparently, if you download the ISO file...
Yes.
And then right-click on it. One of the choices should be make bootable USB stick.
Really?
So it's even easier.
Oh, perfect.
Okay, that's
theoretically, crazy. I'm only... In this case, I have not verified it personally.
Okay.
But worth exploring.
I will certainly give that a try.
There you go.
Let us know how you make out.
Thank you very much.
Sure. Good luck.
Bye.
Yeah, I've been playing with Linux Mint. I like it. It's very nice.
And ironically, the thing you're going to do to make a bootable USB for is install another OS.
Right. Well, that's what's really nice about Linux. Linuxes are free.
Yeah.
And so...
Yeah, would the plural of Linux be Linux?
Two I's. Is it Latin or is it Greek?
Yeah.
Hold on. No.
It's Swedish, isn't it? Linus is
Swedish, so I don't know how they pluralize.
And the other great thing about Linux, though, is there are so many different flavors. And if you buy yourself, which you can get dirt cheap, bunch of flash drives, you can burn a few different versions. Put it in there, boot it up. Now, I'm going to say this right up front, so you know, listen clearly. It runs a little bit slower if you're running it off the USB drive.
It runs very slow if you're running it off
but
the USB
it
drive.
But it will give you a taste of what it's going to look like if you wind up going to put it on the machine. No other system does that.
Right.
Linux is that. It's Mac, PC, do not do that. You've got to install it. Oh, no, I really don't like that. You'd have to uninstall it. It's a pain in the batoot.
Right. You can use almost every version of Linux you can use as a live CD.
Yeah.
And maybe that's what Mark wants to do. You know, you download the images, you burn them to a thumb drive, and you go play with them. Why not?
That's when I, you know, when I you recommended the FFXC. you know, I've had that on there. I hit Cinnamon on there, and I tried a few others. But I had four different flash drives. I sat there with Belina Etcher, burned the images to each one of them, and I tried it, and I played around with it. Yes, it was slow. It was an afternoon, not much to do. I figured, what the heck? Played around with it and decided on one, and then I went ahead and installed it. And I loved it.
In fact, Linux Mint is running on that Chromebook you gave me.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Cool. Good.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty cool.
I'm glad it could be put to good use because, like I say,
I'll be moving it on soon to somebody. But
no, that's fine. That's fine. Like I say, that one, you know, it was sitting there and not using it. It was too big for me to take out into the field for my ham radio.
It is a beast. You bought a beast.
Yeah, it was. It's a 15-inch screen.
15-inch screen.
Whereas now I've got, you know, a little 12-inch laptop that does everything, you know, that I wanted to do.
Yeah, and when you're 40, carrying around a 15-inch laptop is okay. When you're 77,
yeah,
well, the 12 inches are better.
No, well, what also was a big factor is during the winter months and that, I do a lot of my, I'll go to one of the parks in that, and I do it in my car. So I have this
little
thing that I sit over the steering wheel, and I set the laptop on that. Well, that other
bunker, that was just
too big and cumbersome. Yeah. This is nice and compact that I can sit there and, you know, set that up and then have the radio off to my side and I can play with that.
But that'll make a nice desktop for somebody. So
yeah, great.
And like I said, right now it's running Linux Mint.
Perfect.
It's what we're talking about is you can take old Chromebooks and some of them, I think we put up a link on the on the main page for Mr. Chromebox.
Yep.
He has a list of compatible Chromebooks that can be turned into regular Linux laptops. And he gives you very clear directions on how to do that. And the one that Dave gave me was on that list.
Yep.
So it took me 20 minutes, I think.
That long?
There were 18 screws on the back of that thing, and I have both carpal tunnel and arthritis. So getting those 18 screws off and then back on again was most of that 20 minutes.
The ultimate question, folks, we have to ask, did you have any left over?
I did not.
All right. Then
I did not.
Mission accomplished.
Yeah.
Nothing worse than, as Steve will attest to, you're going to put back a GD laptop because they've got a million and one screws. You get it all back together, and all of a sudden you look down and,
I take it back. I did have one screw left over, and that's because on this particular laptop, the way you remove the right protection is by taking out a screw. So yes, I did, in fact, have one screw left over.
But you should have.
But I should have.
In that case, you...
Yep. Yep.
You would have messed up if you didn't.
Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, I honestly did that with a certain amount of trepidation. But like I said, it took a total of maybe 20 minutes.
Yeah,
maybe half an hour.
Yeah,
because I was real.
But you're retired.
I spent a lot of time swearing at the
little screws. Well, that's why we wound up getting the. Especially, you know, if they were all the same size, which in laptops most of the time they are, is this little dish, and it's magnetized. So you could just drop the screws in there, and even if you turn the dish over, you didn't lose any screws.
Yep.
You know, and it was great because those things are a bugger to find. If you drop one on the floor.
So tiny. It took me a while, and I don't count this in the 20 minutes. It took me a while to find a screwdriver that would fit
that
those
small?
Little tiny screws.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Triple zero?
Yeah. Triple zero. And it was, but I had one. I just didn't remember what
because
it was.
Because that's the key, folks. Because if you don't have the right one and you try to use the little bit, you go in there and it will strip it.
Yep.
I was
take it from experience, and that's a pain in the butt.
Putting a computer together this morning, and mostly T5s and T3s,
mm-hmm.
but there was a couple of T2s.
Of course.
And then there's an IP2, which is not quite a T.
Yeah.
It's rounded ends, teaser pointy ends.
Right.
On the star pattern. And then there was an IP1 and an IPR1, which point the other direction, I guess. It's, yeah, why?
Right,
yes, exactly. It's a laptop. Everything is tiny, but why?
Well, just to get them consistent.
Yeah. And every one of them had a different torque value to set my wrench to.
Of course it did. All right, listen, that music tells us the first hour of this show is a history now, but don't despair. There's a whole other hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe coming your way. That's right. An entire another hour of Dave Enright, an entire another hour of Steve Ray, an entire another hour of me, Nick Francesco, and an entire another hour of you, but only if you give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 800-790-0415. We are going to take a much-needed bio break. You should sit back, put your feet up, and listen to the soothing sounds of whatever's coming up in between this and our next hour. But we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at four minutes after the hour, you're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Soundbites. Right here. On member-supported Jazz 90.1.
No space.
No space?
None space. Where's a puppeteer when I see it? No, because they're all escaping the black hole at the center of the universe.
Right. Yeah, this is known space, exactly.
Sorry, your name,
Steve? Yeah. As far as we know,
somebody did a sketch where the aliens landed outside the Miss Universe pageant, and what do you mean? There's only humans here. Here's our contestants,
right?
And with the giant gun, and one of them better win.
All right, we're gonna skip the news, and we're gonna go right back to the phones. And our first caller in the second hour is Fred from Rochester, New York. What's up, Fred?
Oh, I got a question about the duck.com email service. If I send you an email, what do you see? Do you see my real email address, or do you see a at duck?
You see duck.com. So let's say you got Fred at duck.com, which you probably wouldn't do because I suspect somebody's already had that. But if you sent me an email from through duck.com, I would see Fred at duck.com.
Okay.
You would get an email from my real email address.
Unless you're using duck.com. So duck to duck, how does that work?
Right.
Whacked up.
Yeah, and then when you replied, you would reply to my email address, but through the magic of duck.com, it would actually go to them first, and they would hide you behind Fred at duck.com before they send it on.
Okay, so if I give somebody my email address in some form or another.
Right, at duck.com.
Written on a piece of paper or.
Right.
It would be the duck.com email.
Right, and you would get it. You would get the email at your real email address. When you sign up for duck.com, you you ask for an email address there, and then they ask you, where do you want us to forward your email? Because that's all they do. They're a forwarding service.
Okay.
So, you know, fred@duck.com, where do you want to forward to? Oh, fred@rochester.com. So
okay.
The person who's emailing you sees fred@duck.com. You receive the email at fred@rochester.com. And when they get it back, they see it from fred@duck.com. So they never see your real email address. And it strips out.
That's all done still using my Google account.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
okay.
Yes. And so what it does is it strips out ads and trackers and all of that stuff so you cannot be followed. So I am using my duck.com address mostly for signing up for stuff.
Right.
Because even if I reply, they can't track me.
Does all that technology slow things down?
Not significantly.
Technically,
no.
Yes.
Technically,
the
yes.
Best kind of yes.
You won't notice it, but yeah, yes, it does. It does slow it down to, you know, milliseconds. I mean, even if your email took another second and a half to get to you.
Yeah. I'm just talking about like minutes or.
Yeah. No.
What did Google say? They send a billion messages an hour or something like that.
Something like that. Yeah.
I know that if I've done some tests where I send two Google accounts, two Gmail accounts, if I send it from one to the other just to see how it's working, by the time I click on it, it's already there.
Yeah. The only delay I ever see in when I do that kind of testing is I only have a check for email once a minute. So, you know. It might take a minute to get to me, but that's because that's only when I'm checking.
Say that again. How are you checking?
I use Thunderbird, and I've got Thunderbird set to check only once a minute for new email. So, yeah, I will sometimes email will take a minute to get to me. But that's my choice. I'm just, you know, not stressing the servers by hitting them 24/7, 365.
I was way off in my memory. Google processes 376 billion emails a day.
A day.
Wow. 376 billion emails a day as of 2025.
Yeah. And, you're not going to notice the extra half a second that duck.com takes to send your email.
Yeah, every time you send an email, it gets in queue behind 376 billion other people.
Yeah.
Are there any downsides to using duck.com?
Haven't found any.
No?
Well, remembering to use it.
Well, remembering to use it, yes. But but other than that, no, I haven't found, you know, I don't get ads. I don't get trackers.
I was going to say, that's the biggest plus.
Right.
Is when, because you know, when you use Google Chrome, the minute you go searching for something, all of a sudden you're inundated with 20, you know, other services for that same thing.
And we're in that time now where you're probably searching for Christmas presents for other people.
Yeah.
And now your ads are going to be full of those things you already bought.
I get so many ads for ladies' clothing.
Yep.
Now.
Yeah.
I haven't worn a dress in 50 years.
Yeah.
But I got great gams.
Yes, you do. I don't think it's been 50 years.
No, it hasn't been.
I was going to say, because Lori and I saw you on stage in a dress.
Yeah. Anyway, the point is duck.com is very safe and very fast.
Yep.
And I've been very happy with it.
Same here.
You said when you remember to use it. What is that?
Well, you have to, when you go to sign up for something, you have to remember to use fred@duck.com. That's all.
Oh, I gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, and for me, it's just another icon right next to my Chrome browser that when I want to do any searching, I go to DuckDuckGo.
Right.
And then that way, it's eliminated a lot of other garbage coming through and bugging me, saying, oh, you should get this, you should get this, you looked at this, no. And it's like, for Pete's sakes, I bought it over 6 months ago.
Yeah, I know.
Don't keep bugging me.
And I bought it through that company, and you should know that I bought it.
Amazon constantly sends me, we found something you might like. I liked it enough to have bought it a month ago. Thank you very much.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, that Fred, duck.com is very good.
Okay. Thanks.
Yep. Have fun.
Apple offers a similar feature for iCloud users called Hide My Email.
Yep.
Where it will generate a random email address. Some of them are kind of funny. And to use to sign into somewhere or to give someone to send you email. And you use it as long as you want and then turn it off when you don't need it anymore and make a new one.
Right.
And you can have multiple. I forget how many you can have at the
same
time.
But do they strip out trackers?
I think
so. That's the big
thing. Because it's part of the iCloud Relay, which does the same thing.
Okay.
So Apple iCloud Relay is basically a proxy at Apple. So all your internet traffic, all your Apple internet traffic through Safari and Mail goes through Apple's third-party servers. It's a two-node Tor. I looked into the depths of it. So Apple doesn't know. The other end doesn't know each end.
Nice.
And so they strip out trackers. They strip out known malicious links.
Yep.
Before it gets passed on to you again. It's just someone else is not, not someone. Another computer is reading all your stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But you got to trust somebody.
Yeah.
Yeah, at some point, right. And so I've been using duck.com for a while now, and it really is fast and convenient. And
it saves a lot of hassles.
I can't tell you how many things I've signed up for it through my duck.com address. You can do that at duckduckgo.com, and on the right there's a thing that says email services. On the right there's the three bar menu, and you click on that, and one of the choices is email services, and it'll lead you through there. Pretty good stuff. Pretty good stuff. All right, let's read some news. I don't know what news I want to read here. I think I'll read the Microsoft.
Yeah, I was going to say the Microsoft was pretty good.
Microsoft has silently mitigated, which doesn't mean fixed.
Yeah.
Mitigated a high-severity Windows LNK vulnerability exploited by multiple state-backed and cybercrime hacking groups in zero-day attacks. This security flaw allows attackers to hide malicious commands within Windows link files, which can be used to deploy malware and gain persistence on compromised devices. Usually these are distributed through zip files or other archive files because email platforms commonly block .lnk attachments. An LNK attachment, by the way, is just a shortcut, which you can tell because of the small arrow overlay in the lower left corner of the icon on File Explorer and on the desktop. But the .lnk extension is generally hidden. Be careful on clicking on those. Make sure you created them yourself. December's only just started, and Microsoft is already busy with the latest set of broken Windows reports, the hangover from the end of Windows 10 and the slow uptake for its replacement. By now, the sleeping beast has awakened, and they're taking action. The news that as many as 500 million users may have PCs eligible for Windows 11 but are choosing not to upgrade was a major surprise to them. Because they're not paying attention. Now Microsoft is giving all those PC owners plus Windows 11 users without the latest updates a push. Microsoft has confirmed that it is now allowing all supported systems download and install Windows 11 25H2. Whether you're on Windows 2511 or Windows 10, users can opt to upgrade to the 2025 feature update, provided they have a system that meets the system requirements of Windows 11. Of course, this latest Windows 11 update can fail to install, but if the update does apply, it will break dark mode in File Explorer and also cause problems with the Intel Arc GPU drivers, and Microsoft is surprised that people aren't rushing to Windows 11. Microsoft has lowered sales growth targets for its AI agent products after many salespeople missed their quotas in the fiscal year ending in June. So-called agentic features have been central to Microsoft's 2025 sales pitch. At its Build conference in May, the company declared that it entered the era of AI agents. Apparently, the world disagrees. Microsoft says they've now fixed, a known issue that prevented customers from downloading Microsoft 365 desktop apps from the Microsoft 365 homepage. This bug has been impacting users since November 2nd, causing Office client issues for affected customers. Microsoft is also working to resolve a known issue that blocks some users from opening Excel email attachments in the new Outlook client due to an encoding error in Excel file names. The bug has been impacting Exchange Online customers since at least November 23rd. Microsoft says it has already deployed a fix to address the bug and added that the root cause is an encoding error in Excel file names, which triggers a try opening the file again later error for affected users. So it's your fault, and you should be grateful that Microsoft has once again saved your sorry behind. Microsoft also noted that this issue may affect any user who attempted to open attachments with non-ASCII characters in the name. So sorry, everybody, for whom English is not your first language. The fix is slowly rolling out. But, of course, we're already here, so you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415.
Consumer Reports wrote a scathing letter to Microsoft about abandoning all these people that are still running Windows 10, bringing up points that even as recently as 2022 and 2023, brand new computers could not run Windows 11. And so, yeah, you tell someone who has a 10-year-old computer to get a new one, yeah. Someone has a 2-year-old computer, they have to buy a new one? No.
Same here.
And
mine was only 9 months old.
Yep. And you're making the updates anyway for people that have paid. Why should you have to pay? Or use Microsoft other products
right.
in order to get this Microsoft product to work again.
Well, and
shareholders.
That's one of the reasons. Well, exactly. Yeah. That is the only reason. And that is why a lot of people are looking at Linux now.
Yep.
There's just an astonishing amount of e-waste out there. 500 million PCs.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of e-waste. And I would say let's put Linux on all of them. If you don't want to, give me the computer. I'll put Linux on it and move it on to somebody else. There's just no reason to throw all those things in a landfill.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
There was also a similar issue in to the news. There were some podcasts recently that people in podcast client apps started getting podcasts they didn't subscribe to.
Yep.
Because it's an XML file, so it's just text. But apparently, you can put code in the title of the podcast.
Yes, you can.
And that code gets executed when someone browses it, and that code can say, subscribe to me.
Yes, it can.
So far, it's nothing malicious. It's been religious podcasts, which is interesting.
Yeah.
But the worry is that people are testing this function. We've already gone through calendar spam. So if you have a calendar, you can invite someone to your event. Well, the bad guys can invite you to their spam.
Exactly right. Exactly.
And so
right.
Trying to isolate it's almost worse than spam email. You know, how do you test a spam calendar event?
Right.
And now they've got to test spam podcast apps.
Yep.
And podcast XML files.
Yep. It's a
challenge.
It's a challenge. All right, let's go back to the phones. Our next caller is Tom from Canandaigua, New York. What's up, Tom?
Hi guys, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, I've got a couple of old Windows 10 laptops. I want to go to Linux with them.
Sure.
I'm looking at Mint, but I see there's three different versions of that. What would be the best one for someone who knows nothing about Linux?
They say Linux Cinnamon.
Mm-hmm.
Cinnamon, okay.
Is the one for
beginners.
The beginner. Okay. There are at least three. There's LD... Oh, something DE, there's Cinnamon, and there's whatever the other one is. And most, the consensus is that Cinnamon is the one to try first.
Okay.
But as Sounds we said great. Earlier in the show, you can run each of them as a live thumb drive, so you can test out anything you want.
We don't want to do live CDs anymore.
Right, they're not live CDs.
Computers don't have CD players anymore.
I've got a thumb drive to try that. I'm going to just try with the thumb drives on both of them, make sure what I like. And
yeah,
right, exactly.
Yep. Way to do it.
Yeah, might as well. You know, I got to get away from Microsoft.
Yes,
amen
right,
to that.
Right. But they say.
The other option is also Chromium. Which so if you can do everything you want in Chrome, mail and web and pictures and everything and stuff, then you can also use Chromium OS, which is basically just Chrome.
Right.
Which is more than enough for most people who just want mail and web and see pictures of the grandkids.
Yeah. But if you're going to stick with Mint, Your choices are Mate, which is the old GNOME desktop, which is nice, but not modern. There's the XFCE edition. XFCE is what I use. It is very lightweight. It is very fast and simple, and Windows lighter on resources. So if you've got an older machine, it runs better on that, but it's not as pretty, and you'll spend more time learning new stuff. Whereas the Cinnamon edition is a little closer to Windows, and is I got to say, very pretty.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that sounds great. Can you run OpenOffice on Linux?
Yes. LibreOffice is the more modern version of that.
And usually the packages come with it.
Yeah. If you install Cinnamon, it installs LibreOffice by default.
Yep.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
And how about Foxit for PDFs?
There are a couple of different PDF readers. I don't believe Foxit is available for Linux, but there are a couple of others similar to it. And one of the nice things about Cinnamon is you get the software store, essentially. Mm-hmm. I mean, everything's free, but, you know, it's the software store. And you can search for example, PDF reader and see all of the many choices.
Most of the web browsers can view PDFs right inside the web browser.
Right.
But if you want to do more than just view it, then you might need another program.
Yeah, I do a lot of annotating and stuff on them.
Right.
Yeah, okay. Well, hey, thanks for the information, guys. I really appreciate it. I love your show.
Thank you so much. We love to hear that. Thanks. And let us know how you like Cinnamon.
I'll call back. Hey, Merry Christmas, guys.
You too. Have fun. Merry Christmas. We of course, as with everybody on the planet, we renewed our health stuff recently. And my wife wanted to print out her sheet. And for some reason, there was a giant black watermark over the monthly cost.
Privacy.
And it's a PDF.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, Well, can you do something with this? I said, give it to me.
They just used the redact page? Or no, they drew a black square.
No. It was a watermark that said, you know, this is the property of whoever our thing is.
Yeah.
And it just happened to be right over the cost. So I got it. And I actually, the first thing I tried was I opened it in OpenOffice Draw. And I clicked on the watermark. And it showed up as a separate element. And I deleted it. And I was done in like 30 seconds. My wife thinks I'm a magician.
Yep.
Okay. Looking at the
I waited an hour because I didn't want to tell how long it really takes.
Looking at the calendar.
Yeah.
We're going to have to do the 20th.
Yeah.
For the Rumball show.
It was the 27th.
Most important show of the year.
Christmas week. Yep.
Will be December 20th.
2 weeks. Because it's got to ferment enough.
Yeah. You better start them now.
No, I'll start them next week.
Yeah.
I'll actually start them on the 14th. That way they can ferment the whole week.
Good idea.
And bring them in that. This was more important.
It was more important.
Yeah.
Yep.
So for those of you who are looking to get into Linux, Linux Mint, the Cinnamon Edition is the one that most people say is...
Pardon?
Closest to Windows and easiest to make the transition to.
Mm-hmm.
It is also designed to be fairly simple. It's got all the latest new features, and it really is. Again, it's not going to be Windows.
It's going to look a little different.
It's going to look a little different.
Some of the terms are a little different. Like
things
getting that new car.
Places, right.
Yeah, what side is the gas cap on, and how do you program the radio station buttons? But it's still a car. At least the pedals are in the same place. That was standardized long enough ago.
Exactly.
100 years ago. But before that, pedals could be different.
Yes, they could.
Do you remember when the accelerator was on the column?
I do.
Manual choke.
Yep.
Oh, I remember that.
And the headlight switch was over on your left-hand side up against the floor that you could click it.
Except on my original Chevy Bel Air, where there was a leak under the dashboard, and every winter it froze.
Mm.
So whatever it was on, high beams or low beams, it was there until spring. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Fred again from Rochester, New York. What's up, Fred?
Hey, I was speaking of cars. My car is missing the clutch pedal.
Yeah. You got to call Click and Clack because, you know, we don't handle that anymore.
Yeah, we don't handle that. Neither do they anymore.
So the gentleman that was talking about PDF readers.
Yeah.
LibreOffice does a perfect job.
Yep.
Does a perfect job of reading PDFs, editing PDFs. I do all my work with PDFs, signing PDFs. I do it all in LibreOffice.
Great. Good to know.
And I have that on an Ubuntu 2404.
Right.
So one of the things that I, other than the look, you know, I'm hearing a lot about the cinnamon version.
Yep.
When I was looking, I Googled what is the newest version of Linux. And that's the one that came up, and it seemed okay. You know, I don't know what I'm looking at, so I just ran it, and I've got that on several machines, including one that I gave my daughter. And other than it doesn't have all the spangly stuff on the screen, which I don't care about anyway.
Correct.
I want it to work.
Exactly.
There are a couple things that this is over here and that's over there. But that's not even a factor.
Right, exactly.
So, if you can get over the fact that it doesn't look like Windows, which is one of the things I'm getting away from is Windows.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
I don't want it to look like Windows. I want it to look nothing like Windows. Because I want to get rid of it.
You can bring the Windows desktop over if you really want, the desktop picture.
Oh, no, never. At any rate, the LibreOffice is a perfect solution. I think the LibreWriter is a little bit more powerful than Google Docs.
Yep.
It's got some more stuff you can do. It does everything that the older...
You there?
Yep, I'm here. Thanks.
All right, thanks, Fred. All right, we're gonna take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Munich, Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member supported Jazz 90.1. Don't go too far. We are gonna be right back.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites.
And we love rock and roll.
We love rock and roll.
Member supported Jazz 90.1.
Before we go back to reading the news, I should mention there's one more difference, major difference between Cinnamon and Windows 11. In Cinnamon, there are no ads. And no bloatware,
well,
so that's two major difference. Darn it!
I miss those.
Mm.
Darn it! I'm not being interrupted every minute.
And, third thing, no yearly fees.
No yearly fees, exactly right. All right. Let's do the, do I want to do the Google news or do I want to do the miscellaneous news?
Because I can guarantee you they're probably going to try to tack on the end of this coming year in 2026 a yearly fee to keep Windows 11 updates and everything else, so they can go then to Windows 12.
Well, right. There was a whole plan about just stopping the numbers and just calling it Windows.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
But they got to tack some number give people that warm fuzzy.
More importantly,
it's 25H2 now, so we have 26H1.
Right. It's got to have some sort of numbering scheme. Otherwise, if it's just Windows, then people are going to say, I've already got Windows.
Yeah.
Why would I buy the new Windows when I've already got Windows?
Yep, they got to have some other notation there I got the latest and greatest.
Exactly.
Even though it doesn't do zips.
It's like the orange iPhone.
Yeah.
There's no reason for an orange iPhone. No.
did a, that service I was talking about earlier, putting the computer back together. I go to run file diagnostics. Can't run because it has to upgrade the OS to 26. What if the customer doesn't want 26?
Right.
Then I can't do the repair.
Oops. Wow.
So I have to take it all back apart to send the parts back to Apple.
Wow.
Oh, dang.
Now at least you know that ahead of time for the next one.
Yeah, really?
Well, no. Well, the last one, it let me do it anyway.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I don't know what's different about this one.
Chipset it's or Apple. Something.
Yeah, it's Apple. Yeah.
Speaking
when,
of Apple.
When I did it last time, they found a loophole that I used. And
they closed that down. Yeah.
How's this guy in Rochester? Fix this.
Yeah. Dang him.
On Monday, Apple said John Gianandrea, who has been the company's AI chief since 2018, is, and I quote, stepping down, end quote, which is corporate speak for he's not working here anymore. His replacement, what?
It's not quite. He's still working until March.
Wait, he's working March. His replacement is Amar Subramania, a highly regarded Microsoft executive who spent 16 years at Google, most recently leading engineering for the Gemini Assistant. It's a savvy hire, given that Subramania is knows the competition intimately. This has been inevitable since Apple Intelligence, the company's answer to ChatGPT, has been, let's say, stumbling since its October 2024 launch. Apple is reportedly now leaning on Google's Gemini to power the next version of Siri, an astonishing and presumably humbling twist. Speaking of Apple, while the folding iPhone is still nowhere to be seen, it seems Samsung is taking the spotlight with their first tri-fold phone, the Galaxy Z Tri-fold. It expands from phone size to an astonishing 10-inch display. No price has been announced yet, but considering the Huawei Mate XT Tri-fold costs pretty close to an eye-watering $4,000, it's not likely to be cheap.
Yeah.
Speaking of eye-watering prices, Netflix has announced that it bought the streaming and studio parts of Warner Brothers for dang near $83 billion with a B dollars, which is actually an equity value of $72 billion. A mere $72 billion. Finance is weird. This includes their film and TV studios as well as HBO and HBO Max or whatever they're calling it this week. Those of you with Netflix subscriptions can expect those to go up. No word yet on what happens to Discover and all those other shows. The deal should close sometime in Q3 2026. In another end-of-an-era announcement, this one made me sad. Micron Technology announced it will exit the consumer RAM business in 2026, ending 29 years of selling RAM and SSDs to PC builders and enthusiasts under the Crucial brand. The company cited heavy demand from AI centers as the reason for abandoning its consumer brand, a move that will remove one of the most recognizable names in the do-it-yourself PC upgrade market. And I promise this is not a repeat of our last poll news item, but Cloudflare is down. Again. Websites were crashing with a 500 internal server error. A 500 error usually means something went wrong on the server side, not on the user's device or internet connection. Cloudflare implemented a fix, and websites started coming back online. Needless to say, the many major companies that rely on Cloudflare to deliver their content are, once again, not happy. But we're happy when you give us a call. So give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. And there's a news item on.
Yeah, we got it.
You got it. Okay.
Yeah. Fairport Electric was down that same morning.
Oh.
Because of a distribution issue with their supplier, National Grid.
Uh-huh.
Are they using Cloudflare?
Apparently they must be. Well, Cloudflare is a CDN, a content distribution network. So a lot of companies use Cloudflare to distribute their content. And so it is not impossible that that was true. So, yeah, it's a...
Memphis, did you... I noticed I wound up doing it, a couple of days ago, my green light. Had to reboot just because all of a sudden I started seeing a lot of buffering.
I'm seeing that and I'm thinking I'm going to have to reboot as well.
I went down and shut everything down, rebought everything. Buffering's fine now.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it.
But I didn't see any notice though. I'm sorry.
I haven't seen it using the Fire TV directly, but my wife has seen it using the Apple TV connected to the Fire TV.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Which shouldn't matter, should it? We're both. watching YouTube.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm going to do the same thing. I just have to wait for a time to do it when my wife is not online.
Yeah.
which is rarer than it used to be.
Yeah, I wound up getting up early a couple mornings ago, turned on the coffee, immediately went downstairs, shut everything down, brought everything up before, you know, the wife gets on her computer and doing her stuff and everything else, starting up the sling. And, yeah, buffering all of a sudden went away.
One of my problems is that I do a lot of database stuff in my Bluehost mm-hmm. thing. And I've got it locked down to my IP address. So if my IP address changes, which it often does when you reboot, if my IP address changes, then it takes me a little while to redo the security, which, of course, I will not skip. But that's why I didn't do it like last night.
Yeah.
I was just too tired. I thought, today.
Going back a second to the John Jandrea story. So he's stepping down. He's going to be a special consultant until he actually retires in March, I think it was. So somebody said, something's going to vest in March.
Yeah, exactly.
And they're letting him stay until it vests. And he came from Google, which is weird.
Yep.
The new guy came from Microsoft, but he's only been at Microsoft for 6 months and came from Google.
He came from Google.
So what did Apple offer him to leave Microsoft, or did he realize that he just didn't like Microsoft culture?
Well, there's always that. It's an interesting question. You know, the big thing is they poach each other.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, and what was it, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, there was the Supreme Court struck down an anti-poaching deal.
Right.
That all the big tech companies had in Silicon Valley. You don't steal our people, we won't steal yours.
Right.
Which, on its face, sounds like a good idea. But it does mean that people can't negotiate higher salaries.
Right, exactly.
They're going to give me 10 grand more, you give me 20 grand more.
And if you won't give me a raise, I'll get a raise by going sideways.
The problem that then generates is CEO compensation is out of control. I made $100 million at my last company, you better give me $200 million.
Exactly. Exactly.
For doing nothing.
I don't know who is worth $200 million. I can't think of anybody offhand. Me. Oh, sorry. Yep. I do. There's three people I know. Three in this room.
What's that one guy? Was it a shoe company? He dropped his multi-million dollar CEO salary to 70 grand.
Yep.
Raised everyone else to 70 grand. So everyone in the company makes 70 grand.
Yep.
And a year later, morale is way higher. Everyone's buying houses. A lot of people are having children because
they're selling more stuff.
And they're selling more stuff. People are happier.
People are happier.
Because you're not, you know, you hear about living paycheck to paycheck. You know, I live paycheck to 3 days before paycheck.
Right. But when I worked at Logical Operations, I talked to Barry Keeson all the time. And I would say, Barry, how come you haven't hired me? And his answer was always, I haven't found the job you'd be happy for in yet.
Mm-hmm.
And then he finally did, and I was. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Dave from Canandaigua, New York. Welcome back, Dave. What's up?
Well, there was somebody asking about PDF things, markup and all.
Oh, right.
And just wanted to mention that Firefox came out with a whole slew of tools for doing markups. You can draw on them, you can paste pictures on them and all that right with your Firefox. You can either, you know, you go to a website and you'll see it, or you can even open a local file and you can save that file out after the fact.
Excellent. Good to know. Thanks.
Yep. And I still hate Windows 11.
Sure, who doesn't? All right. I know. You're having trouble. I know. I get it. All right. Thanks, Dave.
Yep.
So that's for, I think it was Tom, I think. Firefox lets you do that. How interesting. I did not know that.
Yeah, I knew they could browse, but they're actually letting you edit is cool.
Exactly. That's really nice. And that's, you know, PDFs really are huger than you think they are. Almost everybody uses them because you can lock them, and it means that people can't change your information
easily. Yeah. But now it's getting easier.
It is getting easier. So maybe, you know, who knows? But the reality is that there's just
You used to need the $600 Adobe Acrobat Professional,
right?
Now you need the free Mozilla Firefox,
right? Exactly. So it is getting to be a little different. So anyway, for those of you to get back to old laptops, for those of you with old laptops, take a couple hours and play around in any version of Linux. You'll find that it's easy to use and simple, and it means that you now have a computer that isn't e-waste.
And for your non-technologically inclined friends, that's a good stocking stuffer for you.
Right.
Just give me a box of flash drives.
Thumb drive,
yeah. 16 gigs or higher. Yeah.
8 gig is enough, but the 16 gig is better. There are a couple of distributions that require more than 8 gigs. So 16 gig or higher. I bought a 10-pack of 64-gig thumb drives, super cheap on Amazon. I don't remember what it cost, but it was like, okay, can't say no to this. There's a lot, and Apple is the same way. I'm not just blaming Microsoft. Apple is exactly the same way. When you obsolete a machine, you have fewer choices with Apple, right? With the Apple Silicon, until recently, there were no Linux distributions you could run on it.
But all the old IBM based versions, you can do
all the Intel
based Linux.
Right, all the Intel based versions you could run Linux on.
But the old IBM PowerPC versions, there was a PowerPC Linux too.
There was a PowerPC Linux too.
Yeah.
There's
an Apple Silicon version of Linux in development now.
Right. So don't necessarily throw away that. Is there an Apple Silicon computer that is no longer upgradable?
Not yet.
So it's not necessary. But yeah, for those of you,
the M1 is 5 years old.
Yeah, but it's a very powerful machine. But if you've got an old Intel Mac, don't throw it away. Don't spread more e-waste. Throw Linux on it. See what you think. It can't hurt.
Yeah.
The Apple M1 MacBook Air is on sale at a local large distributor. For half its original price.
Yeah.
Apparently, they still have new, in-the-box, 5-year-old computers.
That haven't been opened.
But and the M1 is just ridiculously fast compared to any of the Intel machines anyway.
Yeah.
Actually, I saw a guy, which one was it? One of the Mac YouTube videos. He found a sealed, unopened, first-generation Apple TV.
Wow.
From 2007, I think it was.
Wow,
which it was a PC with a Intel chip in it before Apple switched to Intel.
Yeah, it's possible.
And he took it. It was just dog awful. It was slow because it was a horribly old chip.
Yeah.
But he said, "Okay, the App Store doesn't work. The YouTube Store doesn't work. This doesn't work. Oh, I can sync my media over Ethernet."
Oh.
It's going to take forever, but then it played.
Yep. I was cleaning, which I should do more often, and I found an in-the-box, but it was used because I had used it, Cassiopeia, which was a handheld PC. It was a personal digital assistant, a PDA,
mm-hmm.
Running the Hitachi SH3 at a whopping 44 megahertz.
Burning up the highway.
It ran Microsoft Windows CE 1.0.
Wince
1.0. The handheld PC edition, which was even less capable than regular Wince. If you can imagine that.
That actually brings up something. You're going to see a lot of sales for computers. Like $199 for a brand new computer. Don't trust it. It's using a 4-year-old processor. It's got 4 gigs of RAM.
Yeah.
It's
small hard drive.
It's using flash storage.
Yep.
Not SSD speed flash storage. Flash drive flash storage.
Right.
Which is ridiculously slow.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, it's $199, but it's not worth even that.
You're getting what you pay for.
Yeah. Well, look at the specs
again. If you're planning to play with Linux and you may have an extra hard drive sitting around that will fit in that device, which isn't necessarily a thing,
mm-hmm.
Go for it. But as we talked about earlier, those mini PCs, if you've got a monitor and a keyboard and a mouse sitting around, a mini PC often costs the same or less and gives you much more power.
We are currently on the 15th generation of Intel chip.
Yep.
So when that ad says 7th generation, no!
Right.
Yeah, it's...
Look away.
Well, my Nook...
It might be 14th gen or even 13th. It's okay.
Right. My Intel Nook was $120 on eBay. And they said it came with 4 gig of RAM and a terabyte NVMe. I was absolutely convinced that it was not going to have any NVMe in it at all, much less a terabyte.
Yeah.
At the time I bought it, a terabyte NVMe cost more than $120. But I bought the thing. I unwrapped it. It looked brand new in the box. I opened it up. There was indeed a 1 terabyte NVMe.
You know what they did?
I tested it using Gibson stuff.
Yep.
It was indeed 1 terabyte.
They shipped you the wrong one. They were doing 2 orders side by side.
probably. And some poor SOB got your...
Well, no, what happens is, and this happens actually a lot on eBay, they buy lots.
Mm-hmm.
So a company buys 50 of them, uses 10, because they then go out of business or whatever, you know, particularly with the this bubble and that bubble and the other bubble. And so they've got these things sitting around. They sell them dirt cheap. The company turns around and doubles the price, and it's still dirt cheap, and they sell them off. They never bother to open them. They don't do anything to them.
Yep.
So whatever was in that box is in that box.
You got that.
And I won. I won big time for that. That's running my Plex server right now. And frankly, it sleeps all day long. It's way overpowered to run a Plex server.
Yep.
Way overpowered. I could run it on a Raspberry Pi 4. And a Plex server lets me rip all my DVDs and music and stuff and put it out on the network so that I can view it from anywhere at any time. It's not stolen stuff. It's my DVDs, my music.
That brought up an interesting copyright question.
Right.
Can you then throw away the DVDs?
I do not.
Yeah. So
right.
You have a legal copy of your disc. If you throw away your disc,
how can you prove
you now have an illegal copy of your disc?
I suspect that somebody could make that argument, which is why I don't bother to throw away.
But you don't have to have them in the living room anymore.
Right. But I'm using it for that, and frankly, a bunch of other stuff. I do some backups on it, and I do some testing and other things on it because, like I said, it's way overpowered for what I'm using it for. But it was also only $120. That would have been the cost of a Raspberry Pi.
Yep, and then some.
And then some, and that, well, depending on which one I bought and how much RAM and yada, yada, yada.
And let's point out that Raspberry Pis don't run Windows.
And neither does this.
Yeah, but... So if you're looking for a cheap computer for Windows, that's not it.
Right, exactly. And so,
Raspberry Pis will run an ARM version of Windows,
Works really good on the new Macs, but for some reason on a Windows-based ARM PC doesn't quite work as well.
I mean, I've got a Windows ARM on 2 Raspberry Pi 3s, and it looks just like Windows. It's got the taskbar down the bottom and menu structure and everything else.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, it just determines what version of the Raspberry Pi ARM that you're running.
So, but, And this NUC, 4 gig of RAM, a terabyte hard drive. Why did I say a 1 gig hard drive? It's a 1 terabyte hard drive. Thank you very much. It's running Xubuntu. It was Windows 10 Pro. It was unregistered Windows 10 Pro.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's another trick.
Right. So this was legit. I mean, this was entirely legit.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing it did not have, and they told me this when I bought it, was it did not have a Wi-Fi chip in it. So I bought, but it had a connector on the back.
For the network.
For the network. So I could run, I could run
hardwired
it on the network. But
it,
when I decided to put it in another room, I bought a $10 Wi-Fi dongle, which works perfectly. Thank you very much. And it just, and I'm not advocating that everybody do this because let's be honest, you can't know what you're getting.
Yeah.
But I won with this one. I bought it off of eBay.
But that's like
it's an i5 processor running at 2 gigahertz. So,
but that's what going back to what Steve said. Is the key thing right now with the holidays is, you know, you see all these deals, but you got to sit back and actually read and understand what you're buying. Yep. Because like he says, you could tell them, you know, you're getting this generation and, oh, well, you know, just because they're saying it's the eighth generation.
Yep.
You think great. That's a great deal. When the current one is like 16, you know, I mean,
that's one of the reasons Apple shifted all their OSs to 26.
Right.
The major year of release. They went to the car model. Right. So,
well, they went to the Linux model.
Yeah.
Because I'm running 25.04,
which is
the April long-term support version of 2024.
And that may be why Windows might stop calling it 11 and just it's going to be 26H1.
Right. Everybody's going to that same thing. And I'll tell you what, it's easy and it's fast. And I personally am now looking at waiting for the January sale as to whether or not I buy another computer. I don't need another computer, particularly if I do get my hands on some old laptops to feed my joy and then move them on and not keep them, move them on. That's the point. That's the plan. All right. We are. Besides which, my wife looked under my desk the other day and said, "Where? What?" I said, "They're all going places. They've all got people coming to get them." Relax. All right, we're done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. I really want to thank everybody who called in. Great questions this week. Interesting questions. We love the questions that you are doing. Please vote in the poll at soundbites.org. Tomorrow night at 9 p.m., if you're available, join us in the lounge. We generally have a certain amount of fun then. And we will see you in just 166 hours. So be good to one another, will you?